The Live with Squacky podcast is sponsored in part by Mid-Atlantic VoiceOver and Antland Productions.
Bonjour,
ça va tout le monde? I'm Val Kelly, otherwise known as Squacky Voice. Everything is going well here, considering there were quite a few weeks where I wasn't even sure what day it was. How are you guys coping? A lot of stores have reopened here in Virginia, so it almost seems like there's some sense of normalcy again. I'm staying positive and keeping very busy with voiceover auditions and Live with Squacky research and interviews. My special guest today has been a professional voice actor for over 20 years and has worked with some of the biggest companies, brands, sports leagues, and organizations on the planet. In addition to his work in the classic agency-based world of voiceover, J. Michael Collins has established himself as a leading authority in the online casting marketplace and has become recognized as an industry-leading talent coach and demo producer as well. J. Michael is a 26-time Voice Arts Award winner as a voice actor, demo producer, scriptwriter, and casting director. It's an honor to have you on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Val. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Professional voice actor, demo producer, voiceover coach, husband, and dad. You really have your hands full. How do you find balance with all the different hats you wear?
Well, balance is a tough thing to find, and I'm fortunate to have a business that I built over the years that allows me to kind of have a predictable workflow. I tend to cram quite a lot into the middle of my week to allow me to sort of ease in and out on Monday and Friday, and don't work weekends. That's a policy that I've had for, I don't know, about 5 years now, and that's a pretty hardcore policy unless there's a very, very, very compelling job. But generally speaking, I don't work weekends. That's family time. Mondays and Fridays tend to be a little bit easier for me. Talking to me now on a Wednesday, which is what I refer to as the middle of the whirlwind. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are days where I really am pulling somewhere between 14 and 18 hour days, depending on my workload. Get a lot in the middle of the week, and then try and have a little bit of a balance with family life towards the weekend.
That's great that you take the time to spend with your family, because that's so important, I think, to balance it out as much as you can.
I think the cool thing about the VO industry is we're all hustlers and entrepreneurs, and we like to work, and can lead to becoming a workaholic a little bit, and I'm certainly guilty of that. Along the way, you have to realize that success is great, bookings are great, obviously building your business is great, but money's not everything, and you have to stop and remember why we do this in the first place, and it's still a means to an end. It's a means to be able to enjoy life. If you don't stop and take the opportunity to appreciate the things that you have and the rewards that come with building a career in voiceover, then what's the point, right?
Right, exactly. You live in Luxembourg, but before the whole COVID-19 pandemic, you traveled between Europe and the United States a lot. Do you have dual citizenship between the two countries?
I am. I was born and raised in the D.C. area, so I'm from where you're from. I was actually born at Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C., and that's still home in my heart in many ways. I think a lot of people have heard my story over the years. Long story short, met a girl, fell in love, bought a house, had a kid, and we're here. But we are dual citizens. I have a French passport by birthright. My grandmother on my father's side was French. My grandfather was a lieutenant commander in the Navy and was stationed in Villefranche-sur-Mer after World War II and met a young French girl, and hence we are all French citizens by birthright as well. And on my wife's side, she's half American, half Dutch. And now Tom has 3 passports, so we can come and go as we please, and he's actually eligible for a couple more. So, when the apocalypse isn't happening, we can come and go as we please. It's been a little more difficult lately, as you mentioned, but during normal times, I tend to be in the States 1 or 2 weeks out of the month for various work purposes.
Well, that's great that your son has 3 passports, although that must be kind of confusing, but he's kind of little to have to worry about it right now.
Well, he's already speaking 5 languages. He's kind of behind on the passport.
That's amazing. That's really great. That's so important for kids to learn early how to speak different languages. So that's really great.
It's really funny because he's been in the local preschool for a few years now and is going to start the big boy kindergarten in the fall. But it's just amazing to watch him mix languages at 4 years old and, go from B, C, D, E, F, G to Eins, Zwei, Drei, to the wheels on the bus, roulez, roulez, and it's just, and to just do so effortlessly. because he's been exposed to it so much since he's been young. And we always joke that he's going to grow up stupid because I speak French, my wife speaks Dutch, but he's going to grow up thinking that we're stupid because we each only speak two languages. he's going to have five or six, which is actually pretty common here.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, but that's really great. I mean, to be 4 years old and speak five languages already, I mean, that's very impressive. Although in Europe, I do think it's probably more common for people to speak more yeah. languages than less because of the nature of where it is. But yeah, that's really great. What are some similarities and differences between the European and American voiceover markets?
They're really vastly different. And, you know, despite you and I are talking at 11 o'clock my time right now, PM, and I'll be working until 3 or 4 in the morning, which is typical for me on the middle of the week. And that's because the vast majority of my business still is in the U.S. I think the biggest difference is that the European market has not gone down the whole conversational road the way the U.S. market has. It's still very authoritative, more mature in terms of the voices that they're looking for, heavier on enunciation and elocution. The whole guy next door, girl next door thing really hasn't caught on here much. And the German stuff is really quite amusing because, well, I do a lot of work for the German market in English, and I get reference files from e-learning clients, and they sound like movie trailers. And it's just the strangest thing to hear, you know, this deep, booming German voice who sounds like, you know, Don LaFontaine had a schnitzel, and they're doing e-learning, and they're doing something that in the States would probably be a bit more conversational. That's, to me, is the biggest difference. Obviously, it's a much smaller market voiceover. Otherwise, in terms of overall jobs and revenue than the U.S. market is as well, which is why, again, you know, 95% plus of my business is still stateside. I think one really positive difference is that European clients do tend to have a way of being very professional, very prompt, very to the point. They pay quickly. There's usually not a lot of BS and not a whole lot of back and forth. They know what they want. And once you give it to them, you don't get as many revisions. You don't get as many extra requests. And that can be nice. Then again, they pay pretty promptly. So at the end of the day, it's a smaller market.
Yeah, that makes total sense. The three official languages of Luxembourg are French, German, and the national language of, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, but Luxembourgish, is that right?
Luxembourgish or Luxembourgeois, if you're saying it in French.
Yeah. Do you speak all three?
I speak French and English. I speak, you know, restaurant German and not much Luxembourgish. Of course, the locals would tar and feather me if they heard me say this, but Luxembourgish is, if German and French had a really ugly baby, that's what Luxembourgish sounds like.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
It's got all the gutturalisms of German with the grammar of French.
Oh, gosh. That sounds complicated and probably something I'm going to try to avoid because I speak French fluently as well. But
probably a good idea.
Yeah. As a voice actor who books work very consistently, what advice would you give to voice actors who are trying to increase their booking ratio?
Depends on what genre you're in, of course. I think the most consistent advice I can give across any genre in voiceover is the neat thing about this business, especially in 2020, and it didn't always used to be this way because, of course, it's a much more diffuse business now than it was 20 or 30 years ago, and opportunities abound no matter where you live, is that you get out of voiceover pretty much exactly what you put in terms of time, in terms of effort. And that obviously assumes that you have the skill set. It assumes that you have the technical ability, that you've had coaching, that you have, you know, the right package put together for whatever genre you're trying to get into. This is very much a meritocracy. Parts of the industry that are maybe a little more political or a little bit more about who you know, but the majority of voiceover today is very much a meritocracy, and best voice wins, best read wins. And so the more you get yourself out there and the more that you're heard by potential buyers, whether that is with auditions or with marketing touches, the more you will book. There are a lot of us who are happy to sell you all sorts of expertise in this industry, but you can distill all of that down to that very simple concept, which is that as long as you've got a great sound and you know how to use your equipment and you have a good technical setup, the more people who hear you, the more you're going to book. So if you want to book more, just get yourself in front of as many people who are buying or potential buyers as humanly possible and make that the focus of your efforts, and you should see some results.
That's great advice. What strategies do you use to connect with more voiceover clients?
These days, my favorite one is organic SEO. I've really put a lot of time and effort into making my website rank highly on certain specific search terms, especially for non-broadcast narration genres and terms that clients will be looking for if they're looking for a voice that sounds like mine. I've been working with the people at voiceactorwebsites.com, Joe Davis and Karen Barth, for quite a while. They've been running my site for a couple of years now. Prior to that, I had a guy who was a web expert who put the foundation and the architecture of it together, and then they did kind of a rebuild and relaunch a few years ago and continued to grow my Google Authority score. And because of the fact that I do rank page one, in some cases at least, page one, number one on certain search terms, I get a lot of walk-in business through the website. And the biggest change that I've noticed in casting over the past 18 months or so, and COVID has only accelerated this, is what I call the curator revolution. And I know a lot of people probably heard me talk about this already, but just in a nutshell, what that means is if you go back 10 or 12 years, we had the first casting revolution, and that was the advent of the online casting sites, which took a lot of business away from the traditional brick-and-mortar world of voiceover and sort of made it more of an on-demand business. And now what we have is a new generation of younger buyers, 25 to 35 people who are casting, who grown up in the gig economy. They have probably been on the receiving end of working for gig economy companies that have not treated them particularly well. And they're not going to go back to the brick and mortar old school world of VO because that's too much red tape, and they've grown up in the on-demand world and they expect it now, and they don't want to have to fill out a bunch of paperwork or worry about a bunch of hoops to jump through. But at the same time, they look at some of these online sites and what they see is Uber or Lyft for voiceover. And they don't want to do that either because that just doesn't speak to them. They have a little bit more of a progressive fair pay and fair play outlook, and they absolutely despise the concept of middlemen. And so what we're starting to see is these younger buyers over the past 18 months or so have started curating lists of talent directly from their websites through direct web search. And we're not talking about paid SEO here. We're talking about organic SEO appearing after the ads. Pay-per-click is not going to get you very far in voiceover because you're up against some companies that have quite a lot of money to do that. But the younger generation of buyers doesn't want to do the cattle calls. They don't want to do, gig economy sites. What they want, a curated list of quality talent. And so while Joe and Karen have done an exceptional job over the past few years of increasing my site's visibility and its Google Authority score, the amount of bookings that I get through my site today, the increase over the past few years exceeds even the work that Joe and Karen have done. And so it's part of a broader trend. If I go back 3 or 4 years, an average week, I would get somewhere between maybe 1 and 3 bookings just walking through my door through the website that I didn't have to audition for, that just came in ready to buy. Now that's an average day for me. And it's not explained by the fact that I rank 25% higher than I did 4 years ago. The talent that I know who have similarly focused on organic SEO are seeing similar results, and it's a phenomenon of a change in the way younger people are casting. It's also coinciding with a change in the way companies are sourcing their creative, and there are many very large companies now, Fortune 50, Fortune 500 companies, that are starting to move away from ad agencies, move away from production companies, and do everything in-house. And those two trends are coming together at the same time as we're in this pandemic and everybody's been working from home, and they're just continuing to accelerate. So my heavy focus right now is on making sure that my website is highly visible, and then beyond that, just continuing to source from the numerous other sources of auditions that I pull from, trying to get on as many talent agency rosters as I can, ad agency and production company rosters, direct marketing, if it's non-broadcast content aggregators, e-learning companies, explainer companies. And the more people who I have connections with who are just essentially sending me auditions or invitations or even booking me directly, the less actual legwork I have to do as the business continues to grow. So, but I led with SEO for a reason, because I think that that really is the wave of today and probably the next few years. And, I hesitate to predict beyond that, but over the next few years, your website's going to drive a lot of your work.
Yeah, I never knew how important SEO was until I started wearing so many different hats and voiceover, but yeah, it is, it is really important. So that's all really great advice. Thank you for all of that.
Sure.
What advice would you give to voice actors just starting out in the industry?
First and foremost, if you haven't done this already and you're thinking of getting into voiceover before you throw good money after bad, get an evaluation on your fundamental ability level from somebody who knows what they're talking about, and find out whether or not this is for you. Don't go to one of the demo mills or one of the scammy schools who are going to tell you, yeah, you're great, you can make $1 million a year doing this, just give me your credit card number. Go to somebody who's going to tell you the truth. When I do talent evals with people, 80% of the time I do not take them on for coaching. 40% of those are just straight up, don't quit your day job. And another 40% I refer to less expensive resources, to group workouts, to Gravy for the Brain, to other websites that offer libraries of content. And I won't work with them until they're ready to actually work with a coach one-on-one and proceed down a path that may eventually lead to a demo. Definitely do not do a demo until you're ready to do a demo. And that's something that whatever coach you do choose, if you do get a quality talent evaluation and pass it and are given the green light to work with somebody, make sure you don't do your demo until your coach tells you you're ready. To me, one of the misorthodoxies of the industry is that you shouldn't do a demo until you're ready to drop it on the door of a top five LA agency. I disagree with that. I think demo ready means that you are at a point skill-wise that you're able to use your demo to help you book professional rate work. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to go out and sign with CESD tomorrow, but it does mean that you should be ready to potentially sign with small market agents, maybe regional agents, and that your demo will allow you to book work at market rates and not just garbage site work. But don't make it before you're ready to book professionally. And that's something that that your coach should help you with. Just be careful, because, you know, it's often kind of, again, in the guise of organizations and schools that have a lot of upsells and sales funnels and want to get you in the door for $100, but then upsell you to this and upsell you to that and upsell you to this other thing. That's usually a sign that you might have run into the wrong people. Do your research. This is a small community. Anybody who is worth their salt will rise to the top, and then you'll hear those names over and over again. Then the people you should stay away from will be referenced with some frequency as well. So do your due diligence, do your research, and be careful. But if you've got the chops, the myth that we're oversaturated with talent, for me, it's a myth. I think there is more work out there than there is quality talent to do it, at least in a lot of genres. That may not hold true for some of the more Hollywood-centric genres, but for commercial, for non-broadcast work, that certainly is true. This is a fun way to make a living, but make sure it's right for you, and make sure you don't put the cart before the horse.
Yeah, that all makes sense. There are a lot of demo mills out there still, unfortunately, and I think people do really have to be careful when it comes to things like that and who they choose to train with, because It's relatively easy now, I feel like, with all the chat rooms and groups and everything on Facebook. There's a lot of ways to find out who are the good people to work with.
Right. The internet never forgets. The community never forgets. You know, it's once you create a bad reputation, that's it. It's not hard to discover where you should go and where you shouldn't. But do your due diligence, because it is easy to get taken advantage of if you don't.
Right. If you could have a superpower, what would it be and why? I love this question.
I'd like to fly. Because I should have been born a bird, I guess. As you know, when I'm when the world is normal, I take somewhere between maybe 75 and 125 flight segments a year, typically, and I'm still like a little kid every time the engines rev up and we take off. And I think it's the most magical thing in the world, seeing the Earth from that perspective. So I'd love to pick the more charitable ones and say I'd love the power to heal humanity. That would be great, of course, naturally, and I would give up the flying for that. But if I'm being selfish, I'd like to fly.
That makes sense. I think I'd like to fly too, but my reason is definitely to get out of traffic. Like, I don't want to deal with it, you know?
That's a good reason.
It's bad when people say, like, oh, LA traffic is so bad. And I'm like, have you been to DC?
Have you been to
Do
DC?
You know?
Yeah.
It's almost, I think, just as bad.
The last time I was there was in January when they had that freak snowstorm. I don't know if you remember that. That just kind of came out of nowhere and dropped 4 inches in an hour. And we were on 95 in the middle of that. And that was fun.
Oh, gosh. 95 is the worst. It is just the worst. I can't take it. Okay, I'm not glad for the pandemic. That's not what I mean. But I am glad for not having to drive a lot.
I think telework is going to stay for a while. I think a lot of people are having that same feeling that maybe we should have been doing this all along.
Yeah, nobody misses the traffic.
No.
What's your favorite travel destination, and where will you travel to first when you're allowed to do so?
Favorite, Hong Kong. Magical city. Vibrant culture, and you know me, I'm a foodie. It's got some of the best restaurants in the world. In fact, not only does it have some of the best restaurants in the world, but it also is one of those places where you can just wander into any old hole in the wall on the street and eat like a king for $20. While you can also do the 3 Michelin star thing as much as you want as well. And it's just a breathtaking city. The views, if you're in one of the high hotels, the views of the bay, it's just hard to even put into words. That's probably my favorite travel city. Close second might be Barcelona, which is, I always describe Barcelona as Paris with a beach at a third of the price. It's got the architecture, it's got the food, it's got all of the beauty, but it's also got the beach and it's not expensive. So yeah, those are my big two.
That's great. I haven't been to Hong Kong, but I've been to Barcelona, and it is a really beautiful city. I think I've only been once, but we were going to the beach, so it was really a nice trip. And my Spanish isn't great, but my French is, so I got through with a little bit of
they're pretty good with Spanish English in Barcelona. Combined,
so that's always interesting, French and Spanish right. combined.
Spench.
Yeah, Spench. Can you tell us a fun fact about you that people might not be aware of?
Well, I used to be a boxer. A lot of people don't know that. When I was a teenager and into my early 20s, I used to box recreationally, not professionally, but that was a passion of mine in my youth. And I got my butt kicked more often than I won, but that's usually because I picked the biggest, baddest guys to fight. Just wasn't really born with a fear gene, but my brain will probably turn to jelly in the next 10 or 15 years. Yeah, there's an unusual tidbit.
That is unusual. I definitely would not have guessed that. That's really cool. I'm so honored to have you on board as a Gold Level sponsor and guest speaker for our first fully online conference, Mini Mavo 2020 in November. What advice would you give to attendees of an online event to make sure they get the most value out of it?
You know, it's not a whole lot different than the real deal. Just go to as much stuff as you can, absorb as much of the content as you possibly can. And if there are socials and, you know, get-togethers around it that are happening virtually on Zoom or whatever platform you may be using, do those too. And you'll be surprised at, I don't know that anything ever compares to the in-person experience, but you'll be surprised at how much closer it is than you might imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good advice. I think it's going to be a great event, and we'll see. It'll be interesting because it's our first totally online one. So I'm looking forward to it, and there'll be
and
a
you
lot
can
of
and you can content. Drink conspicuously, and nobody'll notice.
True. I heard someone go like, "Do we have to wear pants for this?" And I was like, "Really? Come on, now." No one's going to know if you're not, as long as you're not standing in front of your camera. What are a few things that voice actors, well, we kind of already talked about this, but what are a few things that voice actors should consider before getting a demo produced besides making sure they're ready? I mean, that's an obvious one, right?
Know your demo producer. I mean, you know, there are people who coach and produce. There are people who coach and don't produce. There are people who produce who are, you know, primarily on the other side of the glass. There are people who produce that are primarily talent and coaches. If you're looking to get a demo done and you're working with somebody who, as a coach who does not produce demos, they should have a list of people that they can refer. For you to. They don't go out and again, just do your due diligence and do your research. And it's not hard to find out who the good demo producers are. In fact, if you want a great resource, Mark Scott has a list on his site of vetted demo producers, which I'm proud to be on. But there are many of my demo producing colleagues who are on there as well, who are also very, very good. And there are about 8 to 10 of us that you can pretty consistently be sure you're going to get more than what you pay for, that you're going to get quality and that you're going to have a good experience with. And then there are wild cards. There's some that, you know, will put out good demos and bad demos, and then there's some that just aren't great. So do your due diligence, and again, Mark Scott's resource is a pretty good one to check out.
Yeah, Mark has a lot of good resources on his sites, and just in person having a chat with him, he knows a lot of stuff, so.
Yeah.
Are you active on social media? And if so, which are your favorite platforms and why?
Me? No. You'll never find me on social media. What are you talking about? I'm probably too active on social media. I'm very active just engaging with the community on Facebook in particular, which I guess makes me a dinosaur in 2020. Just downloaded TikTok and I have absolutely no idea what to do with it. But I am on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. The one I found consistently valuable for sourcing leads for voiceover is LinkedIn. That has been a good source of actual voiceover work over the years. The other three to me are more about engaging with the community, relatively visible out there on social media.
That's great. I think right now my favorite is Instagram, just because I like the visual component of it. You're right. I think as far as most valuable for leads and voiceover and jobs is LinkedIn. I don't know if I've totally figured out how to use Instagram to benefit my my voiceover career yet, but I enjoy using it. So I guess that's fun.
Well, it's a good platform and just kind of extends your reach, I think, a little bit. But for me, Facebook, and again, this is me being a fuddy-duddy, but I just like the fact that you can add more text, you can talk a bit more, and I don't know, I'm just kind of old school that way. And they say Facebook's the social media platform of the boomers, so I'm not quite in boomer category, but it's the one I tend to favor.
Yeah, I think a lot of people favor Facebook. I think it's Facebook's not my favorite platform, but I think it gets too political for me, so I just kind of go in and do what I have to and get off. So especially right now during an election year, it's a little tough to...
Yeah, it's a little dog eat dog right now. If you can steer clear of the madness, it's not a bad place to be.
Yeah. What are three marketing strategies that you use that have been highly effective?
Tell you my favorite. My favorite is, for many, many years, every month I send out a mass email to my entire historical client list that is about my availability for the coming month. What it says is I'm booked out the following dates. And, you know, during, again, non-pandemic time, I'm legitimately traveling for a week or two. So it'll say, in order to avoid disappointment, please submit jobs under X length by such and such a date, jobs over X length by an earlier date, in order to receive them back before I leave. Even now, I'll still send that email and say, I'm just booking out for X number of days. Thank you for your continued business and wish you well. It's a cool little email because it doesn't look like marketing. It looks like it's helpful. Hey, just wanted to let you know I'm not available during these days. So if you have something to send me, make sure you get it in a certain time. And what that does is it has a way of shaking loose four or five jobs every time that I send it that I probably would not have otherwise booked, where I have a dormant client who I haven't worked with in 3 or 4 years will respond and say, oh yeah, we do have something in the pipe, which where we were going to go for that. And you did great for us a few years ago. Would you like to do this one? And it's a neat little trick to avoid looking like a marketing email that I've been using for quite a while. That's actually the only direct email marketing I do to voiceover buyers. Other marketing tactics in terms of directly contacting potential buyers, again, LinkedIn is a good source. So using the connections of your friends on LinkedIn is a perfectly acceptable thing. I always tell talent I've got about 7,000 connections on LinkedIn. Probably 3,000 or 4,000 of them are buyers. Go on there and steal them. Please reach out. I don't care. That's what LinkedIn is for. And build your network. Just to always keep it soft sell. You know, I'm a professional voice actor. Make it personal. Reference something in their portfolio, on their website. Love some of the work that you do. Work with a lot of companies like yours. Here's where you can find my demos. If you want to chat further, let me know. Sometimes you don't even introduce yourself with a sales pitch like that. You just connect to begin with something short, sweet, to the point, personal, but that doesn't include a link or whatever else it may be. You can kind of judge that based on who it is that you're approaching and whether or not you think they'll be receptive to this is what I do and this is why I'm contacting you right off the bat. Other than that, you know, for me, I like marketing to places that are going to turn into warm leads and hot leads over time. So for me, that's content aggregators like companies that handle e-learning. So e-learning content creators, explainer video content creation companies that focus on servicing third parties, and then production companies and ad agencies, again, to just get on as many of those rosters as possible. Those are sort of my primary marketing approaches.
Those are all really great and things I need to be doing more of. Connecting with clients on LinkedIn, I think, is a major thing I need to be doing more of. I just need to make more time for that.
I'm blessed to where I can outsource a lot of it now, and I have a team that works for me and a couple of people in particular who handle a majority of that for me. So I'm more hands-off than I used to be, but it's definitely time-consuming.
Yeah. Do you have any upcoming appearances you'd like to mention?
Well, in addition to Mini Mavo, we have the One Voice Conference USA coming up in August. So feel free to check that out with a pretty cool lineup. The whatever form Sovis takes, Voice Arts Awards, that's voiceover. I'll be there in one capacity or another. And then, of course, your event for Mini Mavo. So it's hard to keep track of now that everything's virtual.
I know, it really is.
That's what's on the agenda at the moment.
That's great. What are you working on now that you're allowed to talk about?
Well, I guess I can talk about this. I continue to be doing a lot of national spots for Boost Mobile. I have a new session for them tomorrow. I've had a neat little spot running for a while with a family fighting over phones in their living room. The big booming announcer voice read that's been out there for a while. And we've actually got a couple of spots in the can that they haven't sent to air yet because they were done pre-COVID and they feature a bunch of people on buses and public transportation without masks or anything. So they're going to use them, but they can't use them until, I've already been paid, which is nice, but they can't use them until after this is all over. But we're doing new ones tomorrow, and my, I don't know if this is necessarily good news or not, but my casino client, I'm the voice of Hollywood Casino for a lot of their properties across the country, and they're back now, which is nice. Recently done a Helzberg Diamonds with Patrick Mahomes, the Super Bowl MVP, which is pretty cool. So those are some of the more visible ones. And of course, you know, like anybody else, that the majority of our work is not glamorous. It's the corporate narrations and the e-learnings and the medical narrations, which have sadly been abundant because of what's going on, that tend to keep the lights on while we look for those nice, big, juicy nationals.
It's kind of interesting, actually. I've been getting a lot more auditions for things that are very particular, as we want you to be authentically Hispanic, or we want you to be authentically whatever it is, you know?
Well, I think you keep going back to the word authentic, and if there's an increase in anything, it's the desire for authenticity.
Right.
And, you know, that's a function of marketers target 18 to 34. They target that segment, I mean, unless they're selling dentures, they target that segment because they want customers for life. And we have a generation of buyers in America that are the most cynically sophisticated young generation of buyers that America's ever created. And it's because they are more politically active, they're better educated, they have grown up in the post-9/11, post-2008, and my God, now the post-COVID world. And, you know, they have to work four times as hard as their parents did for half as much. Buying a house is a fantasy to many of them. And their little BS meter goes off at the drop of a hat. So authenticity is so key to everything we do in voiceover now, because the people that we're targeting don't buy BS. If you have anything in your delivery that sounds fake or inauthentic, pretty much dead on arrival in 2020. So
right.
I think that's the theme that you're seeing is authenticity.
Right. Yeah, it is definitely a theme. And I definitely don't do those auditions if it says you have to be authentically this or that, and I'm not. So
mm-hmm. Me too.
I did an audition for something that I really thought I could book, that they then said after you have to be authentically this, and I'm not. So I was like, oh,
right. That's
too bad, because I really could have done a really good job with that if I didn't have to be authentically what you were asking for. But
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a line between acting and just genuine life experience. And I think today that buyers are sort of leaning more towards people who have genuine life experience based upon the role that they're casting. And it's just authenticity to an even greater degree than it ever has been.
Well, it's always so great to have the chance to chat with you, J. Michael. Thanks so much for taking the time to be on my show and for sharing such valuable advice. I look forward to seeing you and working with you on upcoming events, and I wish you tons of continued success in your voiceover career and everything you do.
My pleasure, Val, and ditto back at you. Thank you for having me as a guest. I'm looking forward to being a part of Mini Mavo, and then next year, hopefully, Big Mavo, and looking forward to when we can all connect in person again and hug and be normal and return to regular life. So until then, everybody just stay safe, stay healthy, be smart. We'll see you on the other side of this.
Sounds great. Live with Squacky is mixed and mastered by everybody's favorite voiceover tech, Uncle Roy Yokelson of Antland Productions. Live with Squacky was recorded in front of an audience of acoustic foam.
And that's the end.